Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, you've seen it on TV commercials, testosterone supplements that claim to improve health and vitality by treating a condition known as low T. How common is this among men? A Brown University medical expert weighs in on testosterone replacement therapy.
But first, hand tremors, slurred speech, difficulty walking or maintaining balance. If you saw this in a stranger, you might think he was drunk. This assumption may be why in previous generations, Parkinson's disease, a progressive disorder of the nervous system, was shrouded in secrecy, with many patients reluctant to reveal their condition. But over the past decade, celebrities who've been frank about their illness have taken away the stigma. Michael J. Fox's new TV show openly discusses Parkinson's. Muhammad Ali and former U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno have been upfront with their diagnoses. And singer Linda Ronstadt recently revealed to AARP magazine that the disease has ended her singing career.
Our guest today is one of the country's leading authorities on Parkinson's disease. Dr. Kelvin Chu is Associate Professor of Neurology and Neurosurgery at the University of Michigan Medical School, where he's doing cutting-edge research on DBS, deep brain stimulation, to improve the treatment of movement disorders such as Parkinson's. He's recently published a book for patients and families called Deep Brain Stimulation, A New Life for People with Parkinson's, Dystonia, and Essential Tremor. Welcome to the program, Dr. Chu. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It sounds like there are exciting new developments and research being done that will benefit Parkinson's patients. But let's go back to the basics, if you would. What is Parkinson's disease, and who is most affected?
Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative disorder characterized by tremor. And the tremor is more present when the hands are relaxed and at rest, and tend to improve when the hands are in use. It's also characterized by bradykinesia, which is our medical term for slowed movements, also rigidity or stiffness. And these symptoms in combination can cause all sorts of problems for Parkinson's disease patients, such as a masked facial expression where the facial expression is just not as emotional or as animated. It can cause walking difficulties where the steps are slowed, the leg drags, or where the swing of the arm is reduced. It can cause problems with handwriting where the writing becomes smaller the longer you write. It can also cause some clumsiness with fine motor skills such as dressing or cutting food or grooming, so brushing teeth, combing hair, things like that.
Do these symptoms come on gradually, which might make a diagnosis a little harder? If it isn't a sudden change, someone might not know to come in and be seen and go to their doctor. Do these symptoms come on gradually over time, or is it something that really happens in a short period of time, in maybe a week or a day?
No, it actually occurs over a long period of time. Someone may notice a very mild tremor at first, and then over the next year or two becomes a little bit more severe, and then over the next few years it spreads over to the other side of the body. Same thing with the slowness of movements. People may initially chalk it up to old age or arthritis, or some other condition that is common as you get older. And then it's not until you become slower than would be expected for age that maybe a medical professional, a family doctor might say, maybe you have Parkinson's disease. So it's a very slow process. And even after diagnosis, it's a very slow progression.
How is the diagnosis made?
The diagnosis really is made clinically, and what I mean by that is we don't really have a test that allows us to tell you whether you have Parkinson's. We also don't have a test that rules out Parkinson's for sure. It's based on history, meaning what kinds of problems someone has had and how long they've had those types of problems, how it's developed over time, as well as the examination. Do you have the characteristic symptoms like a rest tremor, slowness or clumsiness with movements, or stiffness on examination, or the typical gait or walking pattern? And in the hands of even an experienced neurologist, it can be very difficult to tell, especially when someone doesn't really have tremor and they're just very slow. You have to make the judgment, are they slow enough where you think Parkinson's disease might be possible? Or are these symptoms just explainable by someone getting a little bit older with a little bit of arthritis?
If a person gets a diagnosis very early on and can get treatment, will that actually slow the progression of the disease compared to someone that may wait a few years to really take these symptoms seriously?
Yeah, unfortunately, right now, we don't really have a medication or a treatment strategy that can slow down the progression of the disease. All the medications that are out there right now really calm down symptoms, so that they help the symptoms. Meaning if you have a tremor, it can reduce the tremor. If you have slowness of movements, you can move faster with the medication. But taking it now versus starting medication a few years from now, it doesn't really change the overall progression of the disease. But that is something that we in the Parkinson's disease community are looking at. And there are always clinical trials and discoveries in the lab which are looking at medications or agents that could potentially slow down the clinical progression of Parkinson's disease.
Is the progression consistent across the board for most people, or do people manifest symptoms and does it worsen more quickly than for others?
There's actually a wide range of progression, and so it varies from person to person. I always tell my patients, you may go read a book about Parkinson's disease, but you're not necessarily going to be reading about you. All the books on Parkinson's disease will list common symptoms, common signs, common things that you might notice, but one person may have a few of those types of symptoms, and then someone else may have some in common with the other person, but may have other symptoms that someone else doesn't have. So just the presentation and what people experience may be different from person to person, but also the progression maybe. There are some people who, even though we call it a slow progression, there are some people like Michael J. Fox who, you know, if I recall, he was diagnosed in the late 1980s. So he's had it for many decades. And then there are others who over 10, 15 years may progress, and that's more quickly, but it's still considered a very slow progression.
Our guest today is one of the country's leading authorities on Parkinson's disease, Dr. Kelvin Chu. You're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Let's go back to something we started to talk about earlier. Who's most affected? Who's most at risk? Is it hereditary?
Yeah, those are really good questions, and I think we're still trying to work that out. In general, Parkinson's disease tends to affect people as they get older. The mean age of onset is probably in the mid-60s or so. And so it's a little bit more unusual for someone to have it when they're younger, actually such as Michael J. Fox. When someone gets Parkinson's disease and they're a little bit younger, we think there probably is more of a genetic component to it, especially if the onset is under the age of 40. We've really now, over the last decade or so, identified many genes that are associated with Parkinson's disease, but some of the genes are not very common, meaning people who get diagnosed with Parkinson's disease often may not have some of these genes. There are other genes that are a little bit more common, but we're still not exactly sure how it manifests as Parkinson's disease. I think in general, most clinicians will think that there's some genetic component, meaning that there are genes that maybe predispose you to having Parkinson's disease, but even though you have the gene, doesn't mean that you will actually develop the symptoms. And there may be something in the environment that helps trigger the symptoms.
I know you're doing a lot of work with DBS, as we mentioned earlier, deep brain stimulation. Talk about that and how it works, how it's effective, and any other promising developments that researchers are working on to help control the symptoms.
Sure. Deep brain stimulation is a surgical procedure for Parkinson's disease. It was actually developed by a French neurosurgeon, Dr. Benabid, and he discovered it basically in the late 1980s. It was approved for tremor by the United States Food and Drug Administration in 1997, and then approved for Parkinson's disease in 2002. So we've had actually a lot of experience with it, although in medical terms, 10 to 15 years is actually considered fairly new. What it is really is you surgically place an electrode or a wire into a specific part of the brain. And so the tip of the wire sits in this very small part of the brain. It can be either the subthalamic nucleus or the globus pallidus interna. These are two structures which help control movements in the body. And the tip of the electrode goes there. The wires are then tunneled under the skin and then connected to a battery in the chest. And it's where a pacemaker normally would sit. And this device actually uses pacemaker-like technology, but instead of stimulating the heart, it's stimulating the brain. When you turn on the stimulation, it actually helps the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. It can help tremor. It can help improve slowness. It can help improve stiffness. You know, in terms of how it works, that's actually a really easy question to answer because the answer is we don't really know. The theory or one of the thoughts is that when Parkinson's disease occurs, what happens in the brain is you lose nerve cells that produce a chemical called dopamine. And you need this chemical dopamine in order to help your movements. When you lose the dopamine, sometimes the electrical signals in the brain become abnormal. They don't quite fire correctly. And the thought is that deep brain stimulation, instead of correcting the signals, what it does is it removes the bad signals and allows the brain to function on the electrical signals that are still working properly. And that's how it improves symptoms. Unfortunately, deep brain stimulation, like medications, does not really slow down the progression, although people who have had it will say that it feels like the clock has been turned back a few years. I feel like I was 4 or 5 years ago instead of the way I am now. And so it can actually help symptoms for a longer period of time. The people who are best suited for this procedure are ones who are fluctuating. And I guess in order to describe that, I have to go back a little bit. When you first start treating someone with Parkinson's disease with medications, the medications help the symptoms very well. People can take it a few times a day, and their ability to function, their ability to move is really normal throughout the course of the day. However, as Parkinson's progresses, the medication then doesn't quite last as long as it used to. So instead of lasting 8 hours per dose, it starts lasting 6 hours, and then 5 hours, and then 4 hours per dose. And so what people have to do is then start moving their doses closer together. And if they don't take their medication on time, they see a marked drop-off in their ability to do things. So they can go from being able to function normally to, over the course of a half an hour, being very slow, unable to move, being frozen and stuck in place. And so what the deep brain stimulation does is it makes that, we call that an off time when the medication wears off and patients are very slow and unable to move. What deep brain stimulation does is it makes that off time better. It makes it more like the time when the medication is working for them. So it's good for people who fluctuate during the day. They spend some part of the day with the medications working, some part of the day with the medications not working. And what deep brain stimulation does is because it's being delivered 24 hours a day, it makes people feel like the medication's working for them throughout the entire day. So there's no off time, there's no downtime, and they can do the things that they want in their lives.
Dr. Kelvin Chu is Associate Professor of Neurology and Neurosurgery at the University of Michigan Medical School. He's recently published a book for patients and families called Deep Brain Stimulation, A New Life for People with Parkinson's, Dystonia, and Essential Tremor. Thank you so much, Dr. Chu.
Oh, thank you very much.
For more information on Parkinson's disease, deep brain stimulation, and Dr. Chu, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org/takecare. If you've missed any segments or want to hear them again, podcasts of our show are available on iTunes and the WRVO website.
Coming up, a look at the condition called low testosterone. How common is this in men? And is there more hype than truth to testosterone replacement therapy? You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.